Hello and welcome to the Reverend Hunter Podcast. This is Tony Jones. I'm the Reverend Hunter, joined as always by the Reels. No. Oh, I got to start over. I screwed it up. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Reverend Hunter Podcast. This is Tony Jones. I'm the Reverend Hunter, joined as always by the threads to my Instagram, Brandon.
Whoa, we switched themes officially, and it's one I understand.
I mean, Threads is kind of the little brother to Instagram.
Yeah.
The little brother we don't know if he'll survive.
That seems fair.
I met some guy at Pheasant Fest, and he said, oh, yeah, the other time we talked was on, and then he named this, like, short-lived social media, I can't even remember the name of it. It was a thing where you would do live audio conversations.
Oh, yeah. I remember it. Wasn't it Periscope, right?
It wasn't even, that was another one. This was another one. I can't even remember the name of the darn thing. It was during COVID and we did like some hunting ones and I organized a few and then the whole thing petered out. You never know which social media. I think with Threads or whatever, because you know Meta and Mark Zuckerberg are behind it, it's probably got a better chance of surviving. But it's all about adoption, Brandon. Who knows?
I've never used Threads once in my life. I don't even know what Threads looks like, to be honest.
Well, now whenever you post on Instagram, it's like, hey, do you want to also post it on Threads with one click? And then you know.
Oh, all right.
Anywho, well, you had an ephemeral visit to Pheasant Fest.
Yeah.
How'd it go? It was a rowdy night, man. I should probably confess this now, but the rear speaker at the bar where we were, I turned it down.
That's fine. Yeah.
Because it was so loud. Even Rob Burrell looked at me and he was like, yeah, thanks. That was probably good idea.
Yeah, it was so far away for me to adjust anything because we were in just basically a giant long garage.
Concrete box. There was not much sound absorption in that space except for the people who were in the room.
Yeah. No, it was a fun event, but it was a nightmare for audio.
It was the flush. It was the flush live podcast at Pheasant Fest, and it was a rowdy night, man. That ended up raising $2,500 for Pheasants Forever, which was pretty. It seemed totally spontaneous, like that wasn't actually planned. It just happened.
Yeah, who would have thought? Who would have thought? That actually went really well. I had a lot of fun. And Travis, I mean, I got to give him credit where credit's due. He put together that show. He did all the questions and everything on his own. I was just along for the ride.
Yeah, it's a fun, big night for them, and he does a great job putting that trivia contest together. But, I mean, by setting it up, he doesn't have to compete in it.
That's very true.
Probably saves him.
Well, how about yourself? I've heard you had a busy couple weekends aside from Pheasant Fest.
Yeah, I had a great time at Pheasant Fest, and that's the interview that we're going to air today came from there. This last weekend, I was just at Canoe-copia. So I was at
Canoe-copia.
I tell people who aren't really in the same world that you and I occupy that, oh, yeah, I was at Pheasant Fest and then I went to Canoe-copia. They're like, those are some oddly named conferences, but they're kind of like punny and alliterative.
Yeah.
Canoe-copia, like if Pheasant Fest is the world's largest upland hunting convention, Canoe-copia is the world's largest paddle sports convention. Canoeing and kayaking and then some paddle boards and stuff like that, and similar a lot of different talks, a lot of different sessions on everything from like how to fish for smallmouth bass out of a kayak to the best routes through the Quetico, and then a big expo floor with, oh my gosh, dozens, scores, maybe hundreds of canoes and kayaks and roof racks and camp food and ultralight tents, and my favorite Superior Gear hammock people were there. Yeah. So met some people, had a great time, gave a talk that was, I think, very well received. That was basically I gave a sermon in which I preached about canoeing. a godless right. sermon, you might. Maybe it wasn't godless. It was just a non-sectarian sermon. It was, you know, the same thing. I gave the invocation at the Pheasants Forever National Banquet for the second year in a row, which is a great honor. And the challenge in situations like that is to write something that is sacred without being sectarian. And
that's it's got to be difficult to do.
Yeah, my Canoocopia talk was that as well. So that was fun. Yeah.
Cool. Well,
good awesome. Times. Good times. And yeah, I've been doing a lot of work around the house because being empty nesters now, we can arrange the house to suit the needs of Courtney and me and the dogs. And yeah.
That's great. That's going along swimmingly.
It is. I mean, now I have to figure out my, because with the book coming out in a couple weeks, I've just got a bunch of podcast interviews lined up. So this is such a 2024 problem, but I have to figure out like my best Zoom background.
Ah, sure.
Because unlike our podcast here on the Talk North Network, most of the podcasts I do have some kind of video version.
Sure.
Sorry about that.
That's good.
Yeah, so I got to, even if they don't air it, I want to look like, I don't know. So I'm trying to figure out my video backdrop.
All right. That's you got like one of those cool ring cams that all the young people have?
I do have some kind of a light.
Okay.
I think that Courtney got for me, but I'm just using my MacBook camera and the mic that you told me to get, which there I'm using go. Right now. So that's what's coming up. And you, man, it's spring. The buds are already showing up on the trees. Are you getting outside, walking your dog?
Yeah. Just I'm enjoying it. I can't wait for today. I wish I didn't have to work so much because it's going to be even better out today. But yeah, I'm loving it. Already getting ready to prepare that first camping trip. And then me and my partner were looking to get morel mushroom hunting too, obviously within a month, maybe even two. It should be early this year.
You tried at my place last year with no success.
No success.
I've showed other people, you know, where our place is on like Onyx, and other hunters are like, there got to be morel somewhere in there. And I mean, you said the same thing. And there must be. I just have no idea.
Yeah. Well, and I think they'd be the black morels, and the season's a little different than it is for the morels here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you guys chasing the eclipse? I know several people who are going to try to catch the big eclipse late in April.
You know, we haven't planned anything specific. I'd love to catch it, but I mean, I'm not going to go completely out of my way either.
Yeah.
Probably got work to do, I'm sure. How about yourself? Are you going to check it out?
No, I don't really. I don't know. I'm surprised, honestly, at the people I know who are so into it, but yeah, I mean, I say it's a cool thing, but it's a lot of work for like 3 minutes of.
Yeah, eclipse. I saw a full eclipse when I was in like elementary school. I'm good.
there's a Delta flight you can take, and they fly you right like down the path of the eclipse. And I
really?
Think the flights. I heard the flights sold out, and they're maybe going to add another flight or two. But I would stink to get the aisle seat. You know what I mean on that flight.
They shouldn't even sell tickets for the aisle.
Right. Probably they don't, or they charge a lot more for the window seat.
Right. Well, now you have me thinking: does everybody crowd to the one side of the plane? Is that safe to do so?
That's right. That's yeah. I mean, I don't know. That would be an odd flight to get on, but
that's kind of cool.
My guest this week is a guy I've been following for a long time and had some, you know, online conversations with, but had not met in person until Pheasant Fest. Tim Brown goes by the moniker The Bearded Uplander, and just a sweet guy, a giant of a human being with a big beard and a big presence, but just sweet and like a gentle giant kind of a guy. And his videos, you can catch him on Instagram and YouTube, and there's a link to his website in the show notes. I asked him, you'll hear in the interview, I asked him why, of all the people who are just like shooting pheasant hunts off GoPros strapped to their baseball caps as they hunt, why his have kind of gone big and gone viral. And well, he's got an answer for that. But there is something special about his videos. So I think you'll really like our conversation. We start as often in these conversations on the Reverend Hunter podcast, we start kind of getting to know each other. And then, you know, by the end of the hour, we're going pretty deep on issues of life and death and existential truths, you know. So it's good stuff. I think you'll like it. I appreciate you listening and your support. As always, I encourage you to rate, share, review. And if you've got ideas for guests or sponsors, drop us a DM and let us know. Thanks for listening to the Reverend Hunter Podcast. Here's my conversation with the bearded uplander, Tim Brown. Tell me about your gallbladder.
So the crazy thing is the Iowa bird chaser, Nick Martin, was up. He needed a couple counties because he's doing that 99-county thing in Iowa. So he was up, and we were hunting with some friends. It was getting close to Thanksgiving, and the day before we had an unbelievable hunt. Killed a lot of birds, and then the night we went to a steakhouse, and I come back, and middle of the night I wake up, and I just – it's – a gut like cramp and I don't know what it is, and I'm like, okay, there's something wrong. And I've had it happen before in the past,
but then you pooped and it felt better.
Well, like you think it's gas and all that, but it never resolved itself.
Sure,
right,
sure.
So the next morning I wake up and I'm like, Nick, I can't go. I'm gonna try to figure this out, because it always went away, you know. So after a couple hours, no, it wasn't going away. I'm like, it's time to go to the hospital. Went to the hospital. They did a scan, and it had 15 stones in it.
Holy smokes.
And she goes, it's extremely angry. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? And she's like, it's going to have to come out. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. It took them 2 days to figure out to get it out. So the day before Thanksgiving, that night, I'm in the hospital. I've been in the hospital for 2 days then. And, I mean, the pain was excruciating.
Oh, I bet.
And I've had kidney stones, and they're bad. But this was 10 times bad.
Holy smokes.
So I'm in the hospital, and they finally get me scheduled to get it out. And they get it out, and it's Thanksgiving Day. I get to go home.
Okay.
So I go home to my friend's place where we're having Thanksgiving. And my girlfriend came up, and she drove me around and pretty much was my nurse the whole time. And we get back, and Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Christmas is too, but Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday because we get a hunt, we get good food. I can't eat any food.
Oof.
Because my belly has just been destroyed, you know. I ate a little bit of stuff, but when your gallbladder's taken out, there's certain things that can trigger it and set it off.
Yeah.
It was horrible. So... and then it just compounding it. So the next day I wake up and I walk out to the kitchen, and the girls are sitting there and they're making breakfast, and they're like, you're not going to be happy. And I look outside and there's 3 inches of fresh snow on the ground.
Oh, dude.
First, like, significant snowfall in Iowa. You know what that means with pheasants.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I couldn't go, and I'm just like, this is the worst, you know? So we made it, and, you know, middle of December, I started feeling normal again.
Okay.
So I got to get out the last part of the season, and, you know, I couldn't walk a ton, but it was getting back to normal. And then the last week into the season, it was,
you're okay.
Gangbusters, yeah.
What does your gallbladder even do?
I think all it does is hold the bile to break down the fats and that. So that's the other thing. Like, a lot of people in my family have had it taken out, and, like, my sister-in-law cannot eat broccoli because it sets it off.
Interesting.
I love Polish sausage and sauerkraut.
Yeah.
I had some this last week. That's off the list. I can't have any fatty sausage.
When it
turns your gut, it just wrenches on it. Like it's,
oh dude.
And sucks. The crazy thing is, like, when it's over, it feels like you had the best ab workout ever, you know, cause your stomach is just sore.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, it lasts a couple days, but if I just stay away from the really fatty stuff, I'm usually pretty good.
Okay.
But man, that's the bad thing though. The really fatty stuff is the good stuff.
That's the best stuff. You know,
it's the best stuff to eat. But is what it is. It's just things you gotta roll with.
Yeah. So we're here at Pheasant Fest. We're right by the bathrooms and the exhibitors' little hospitality suite. So you might hear some flushing in the background. That's not us. That's just people.
Yeah.
People using the restroom. How many Pheasant Fests have you been to?
Oh, geez. Probably, I don't know. There's been 7 or 8, probably, I bet. Okay. How many have there been? Because I remember when it was
I think there's
Des Moines.
Been like 20, yeah.
I've been to Des Moines, Omaha, Minneapolis, here twice.
Okay.
Would have been 3 times if it wasn't for COVID, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited for next year, too. Next year's going to be a
blast.
You
think so?
Yeah.
Kansas City.
What did you think of how busy it's been?
Man, it's, this is just my third. I've been to the two in Minneapolis, the two most recent ones in Minneapolis. You know, the Minneapolis Convention Center is obviously more spread out. There's a little more room, elbow room. This place, you know, I've heard that, I don't know, they maybe have outgrown this.
They might have.
Which would suck if they couldn't come back to Sioux Falls. I mean, they got to, you know, how can you not do it in South Dakota?
Yeah, you're
but, in. And there's nowhere else in South Dakota but here to do it.
Yeah, this is as big as it gets in South Dakota. Yeah.
So I think they'll have to make it work here, but, you know, yesterday, man, you could hardly move. It was the biggest challenge for me has been walking around with the dog.
Yes.
Because it's so crowded, and then he's kind of like pulling, and my biggest problem is all about him. He just, every vertical thing we pass, he wants to lift his leg.
Oh,
I'm
like,
no, dude, you can't pee in here.
That was the whole reason why I didn't bring mine. You know, I got 2 German Shorthairs, and Mac would be fine, like, as far as, like, not jumping up on people and just being a good dog, but I'm afraid of the lifting the leg.
Yeah, so the bird dog parade was a real challenge.
I bet it was.
I mean, that is like you go from like you know driving in a car for 4 hours from the Twin Cities, like no stimulation, then all of a sudden, like, hey, here's 100 other dogs indoors.
Yep. Overload. Complete overload.
And you can't mark anything, and so that was a challenge. But yesterday he was much better, and. He's like, once he figured it out, he's pretty chill.
Yeah.
But, it's been great. I mean, man, the bird dog stage has been standing room only every time I've walked past it.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a lot of places that you can go and see literally every breed of dog that is used in bird hunting.
Yeah.
They're here.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you, even if you're not a hunter, if you like dogs. This is the
it's
best
a great
place
spot
to
go. Be. Yeah, it's a great spot to be. So when you, locate yourself for us in the world. Like when you wake up in the morning, look out your window.
I'm actually
What do you see?
Well, I see town because I live in town, which kind of stinks. But it's south of here a little ways. I'm kind of crop ground and Los Hills all mixed into one.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, we do a lot of hunting there, but I travel so much to go hunting anymore that it's a I like the different places to wake up to.
How far do you have to go from your front door to get a spot you like?
Less than 2 miles.
Dang, dude.
Yeah, less than 2 miles.
I would go every day. I mean, I tell myself that, but I mean, it's probably not the truth.
No, it's tough sometimes, but you know, work gets in the way and. All the other stuff that you have commitments to do get in the way, but I mean, I get out quite a bit actually, because in the fall the seed sales, you know, because I work for a seed company and it's not really gangbusters.
Okay.
So you know, late season I can use a little more vacation time and stuff like that to get out.
Yeah.
And you don't have the pressure in late season either. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't want to go out and
I
love it.
I concentrate my visits in South Dakota like post November 15th.
Yep.
And since they did the Craven money grab of extending the season to the end of January for people like me who are just like junkies and need to shoot more pheasant hunting into my veins.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, can I can I give South Dakota another $145? Yeah. And then hard hotel room. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I'll buy my third, you know, third license and come out for times five and six.
Yeah, they did it right on that way just to get more revenue. I wish they would have a year-round one, but they don't.
Is that right? Do you?
I wish they would.
What do you think that would mean? I mean, wouldn't...
It would probably...
Conservationists would freak out, wouldn't they?
I think...
Or would you have to stop during nesting season, or...
No, I mean a year-round, like year-long, like, for the whole season. Like
oh,
instead
like
of the
a non-resident.
Weeks. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, I was thought you were saying a instead year-round.
Of
a,
oh, yeah,
hunting.
No way. No
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't like it going to January 31st. I don't like
you know,
it.
You know, I did a story when they first did that. I wrote a story for the Outdoor News about it, and I interviewed three or four different wildlife biologists, like one Minnesota DNR, one South Dakota Fish and Game, and like one Pheasants Forever. And all of them said the same thing. It's not going to hurt pheasant population, is what they told. Here's what they said with a caveat.
Right.
Because they're like, you know, one rooster impregnates 40 to 60 hens.
Yeah.
But they said where you herd them is in a late season hunt. If you bump them out of a place they're safe and warm.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's.
And I have.
And I don't care about the roosters. I mean, they're going to be fine. Like, you know, if some of them die, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the girls. That's all that I, at late season, that's all that I worry about.
Yeah.
Because there's enough roosters that they will find someplace. And like you said, they only need one.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Or two for 20 hens, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the only thing that I worry about. And not to knock on anybody's way of they hunt or whatever, but just driving around and then getting out and walking a slough real quick in a blizzard, you could kill the whole slough of them, you know?
But you
that's
should
what scares me.
I know, but yes.
Just
be, but I've just, also, I'm guilty. Guilty as charged because I have done that, and that's some crazy fun hunting.
Oh, yeah. But like, I mean,
you're
like
right.
In a blizzard, that's just, it scares me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the older we get, the more we think about stuff like that.
That's probably true, yeah.
In my 20s, yeah, I'm going to go every day, and I'm going to, I know the spots that I can walk really quick.
Yeah.
And probably shoot my limit.
Yeah.
And you don't think about that, you know? You don't think about the longevity of the next season. Like, I just bumped all them hens out, and now they don't know how
to
get
where
back
they going?
To where they're going.
Yeah, where are they going to go? Yeah. I mean, and it probably was different when there's more habitat, and they can just fly to the next farm.
Yes.
There's another slough or whatever. But well, if the next slough is 2 miles away.
Yep. And that's the other thing, like you just said. Like, if there's stuff around it, then, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
But if it's like the only, you know, you got 25 acres and a cattail slough in the middle of it and there's nothing else around.
Yeah.
And you go bump it when it's blowing 40 mile an hour in snow. Yeah. They're probably not going to make it. That's the only thing I worry about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're probably right. And that is the one thing those biologists said is they're like, if you care about the birds, don't hunt during a blizzard.
Yeah.
Like that's the one thing.
Yeah.
If it's, and I came out here this year in January, and we were in short sleeve shirts.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Now, it was hard because there was some snow, and it was that deal where, you know, it snowed, but then it's crusty on top. The birds are just on top. They're not burrowed in or whatever. They're not in those tunnels in the cattails.
Yep.
They're just standing on, and like in a tree belt, standing on top of crusty snow, and the truck just like drives down the gravel road, and they're just,
and
they're gone.
They're gone.
One leaves. And they're just, it's like one giant organism. They just all.
Yep. The whole thing goes. And then half of them are running away before they even think about getting up.
Yeah.
It's.
So that's challenging. I mean, it's, I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah.
But
late season wild pheasants are, it's a whole different animal than
it is.
Let's
talk about this wild pheasants because Mark, who's recording gear, he always gives me grief. Whenever I'm on the way to South Dakota, he's like, have fun shooting those pen-raised birds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're not. Dude, I'm like, come out here with me. Like, these are not. But South Dakota does release birds under, like, dark of night, right?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, about the sporting of that, the ethics of that, that kind of thing?
I mean, when it comes to down to it, like bottom line, you're going to South Dakota because of the experience. I think you're going to South Dakota to shooting pheasants is what you ultimately want to do, But if they're putting out a surplus to make sure everybody that goes there has a good time, I have no problem with it. I mean, it makes sense to me. And yeah, to be honest with you, you paid the $140. Say you come from Georgia, you paid the $140 to hunt there, and you're driving, what is it, 24 hours pretty yeah. much. You want to have a good time. You want to shoot some birds.
Yeah.
It's the only time they're going to come. Like, guys like you and me that really like the wild bird chase and stuff like that, we're not going to the places where it's going to be easy pickings. We're right. going to stuff that's going to be a little more challenging. We want the dog work to be amazing. We want it to be a little more challenging. It's just better for the sport to get more people. And I'm fine with liberated birds. I mean,
liberated birds.
If there's one that's like in an area that I'm hunting and, you know, maybe it's banded or whatever, you know, how they do that too, it makes no difference. As long as it's not, you know, like gets up 2 foot and then sets
yeah,
back down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a game farm bird. That's different.
I don't like those.
That's different. And, you know, speaking of banded birds, I mean, I don't think anyone's ever shot the $1 million rooster rush Huron. You know, they always release one in around Huron that's like $1 million. And I don't think anyone's ever gotten it.
I don't think so either.
So that insurance company, whoever like underwrites that competition.
They probably have it locked up in somebody's barn.
I know, right? And the way I also think of it is like what I'll say to people who, I'm like, look, ringneck pheasants are an introduced species.
Yeah, they're not.
They're
even
non-native
native
species. Yeah. They were introduced as a sporting bird.
Yeah.
So like that's why they're on the landscape.
Yep. That and food. They were put on there for food and to hunt them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, I hate to, you know, talk about it because Tyler Webster and I talked about it too. It's just, I don't understand why people put different animals on different pedestals.
Mm.
And you say it's non-sporting, like, you know, like he said about turkeys, like what makes it any different than any other bird that I can't shoot a turkey out of the air?
Right. You get mad about it. It's not sporting. Yeah.
And if I shoot a pheasant on the ground,
it's not sporting.
Somebody's going to flip out about it. It's like, what?
Or shooting a duck on the water.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
It's just, it, you know, you just have to.
And I know guys
it.
Were like, oh, I would never shoot a duck on the water. Well, I'll shoot a Canada goose on the water because those things suck. You know, like,
right. Like, well, and that's the thing that I've heard too, like with ducks and geese, like you fooled that duck and goose 100% because he landed in your decoys.
Right.
So you're calling, you did the ultimate thing by fooling that bird and it committed the whole way. What more do you want? I mean, you call a turkey in all the way in and you shoot them like that. That's just, it's like,
I know.
It's like we shoot ourselves in the foot. You know what I mean? Hunters, we bicker more amongst ourselves than we do anybody else.
What I've found interesting as somebody who's moved like from the religion world into the hunting world is that there is no systemic ethic of hunting. There's like this kind of ad hoc method where, well, I don't know, I've heard it's not sporting to do this. And this, the guy who mentored me said, don't ever do that. And it's, there's not like, you come in a religious system, there's like thousands of years of people writing ethical treatises. And there's kind of a, like a corpus of thought. And hunting, it's like, yeah, there's like the Boone and Crockett deal from 150 years ago. And then do people, you know, have people even read that or Jim Posowitz or whatever? Like, but there's no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this has also been interesting to me of late. And I've been talking to some people about this, but like you got Pheasants Forever for pheasants and upland hunting. You got BHA for like public land. You got Minnesota Deer Hunters for whitetails. You got Rocky Mountain Elk, you know.
Yeah.
Where's that conservation org that's like, we're the ethics org?
Yeah, that's like the sportsman's, you know, something sportsman's alliance or, you know, something crazy.
Yeah, or
crazy
like somebody,
like that.
People are like the Orion Institute is kind of that. But like, well, where's the Orion Institute isn't here.
Right.
Like they don't have a booth. They're not speaking at the public land stage.
Yes.
So I just think there should be, maybe I should be do it or something, but there should be some kind of like.
Yep, you should do it.
Like org that's like, we're the ethics org. We're going to be the ones who, we're going to catalyze conversations about this.
I agree. I mean, there needs to be something to try to bring all of it together. And I think, actually, if you really think about it, I think dogs are probably the hub where it should start.
Okay.
Because you've got houndsmen, you've got duck, you know, you got waterfowl. So anything that hunts with a bird and a dog or even fur now, you know, you got this mountain lion problem stuff that's going on with hunting with dogs in Colorado.
Right.
And then you've got bobcats and you've got, you know, running bears, dogs with bears. You've got, you know, rabbit dogs in the South. You, all this stuff. I think dogs could bring literally everything closer together to have that conversation like you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Boone and Crockett, like the Iowa Deer Classic's going on right now too, which is the state that I'm originally from. And my buddy has a deer that he killed this last year, bow season. And we believe, like, gross score of antlers. I mean, like, that's what we, like, nets, you know, because the net score is, you know, what it nets typical-wise, you know. And that's what gets you in the books, the record books. Well, a lot of people are going to this new style where it's just the gross score. And they say nets are for fish. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a big – I mean, that's another big – issue with like deer hunters. It's got to be the gross score, it's got to be the net score, and it's like, come guys, just who cares? It's a giant deer. It's a literally 190 inch giant deer. I don't care what it scores. It's just a big mature buck, and that's, you know, it's just like we all have to come together, and like you said, an ethics group would be really good.
Tell me how your life has changed since, I don't know, you pick it, like, since Instagram or since your first GoPro or, like, your hunting life going online. How's that changed your life and your hunting life?
It's kind of surreal. Like, yesterday, I'm sitting in the Chief Upland booth helping Jake and Kristen out, sell some vests and just talk to some people, and they're nice enough to let me put some of my merchandise up there and you know, peddle that and sell some shirts and stuff. But it's really surreal after you have, like, I mean, my Instagram has grown leaps and bounds in the last year and a half, like crazy. And people, you know, always commenting, they love my videos. I mean, there's always going to be haters and stuff like that, but for the most part, it's all positive, overwhelming. And sitting in their booth yesterday, I can't remember the guy's name, came over with his little kid, and he said, "We watch your stuff all the time," and he watches it too. And I'm like, "Well, I hope, you know, you have it on mute, some of the stuff, you know," because right. sometimes there's some bad language or the heavy breathing that everybody gives me crap about. But it's like surreal to, like, people actually watch and actually care about, you know, because, and every one of them have said to me, "You hunt the exact same way that I hunt. You're not one that's going to, you know, say your dog's on point and the bird flushes wild. You're still shooting the bird." Like, that's what I do. If people do the field trial stuff and they, you know, you want your dog to hold the point until you release it. I mean, that's all. However you want to hunt, you hunt. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "We really like your content because this is exactly how me and my buddies do it." You know, and I show the stuff that we joke around and we, you know, make fun of each other when we miss and where we fall down or, you know, something like that. And we just cut up and we have a great time. Like, that's when I was growing up, that was what my dad and all of his buddies would do too. And my brothers and their buddies, it was always the camaraderie of everybody get together, especially opening day. Opening weekend was, I mean, it was a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And you would all get together at somebody's house and we're like, "Where are we going first? We're doing this, we're doing that." You'd get back and after the day's over and you start cleaning birds and then the beer starts to get drank and then you all go out to supper together and you know, you just, it's just a group thing of everybody together that, you know, when I was younger, it always happened. And then I come out to where my friends live the first time in like 2008. And we were hunting with their dogs, and I didn't have a dog at that time because Eastern Iowa was just after the boom of the CRP started coming out. So we lost all of our birds.
Oh, yeah.
Or not all of them, but majority of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, Eastern Iowa
was hunting over there.
Iowa was a mecca in the 90s. Yeah. I mean, it would rival South Dakota with bird wise. And so I just went away from it and I started turkey hunting and deer hunting. And then, I came up here, or up to where my buddies live up here, and I went, and the birds' numbers were, you know, like it was back when I lived back in Eastern Iowa. And they, my friend Mark has a bunkhouse, and we all stay there, and everybody's in the same room, and we all cut up, and we'd go, we'd go to the bar, and we'd have a good time, you know, when I was 20 and I could actually handle drinking anything. And so I was like, okay, I'm really liking this, but the one thing that was missing was the bird dog. I didn't have one. I always had one growing up. I always, you know, dad always had them. My brothers always had them. So I was like, okay, done deal. I'm getting a bird dog next year. Okay. I'm doing it. So the next year comes around, and a friend of my dad, his son had some wire hairs, and I told Terry, which is the guy that I got Gus from, that I want one. I said, he said his dad was going to come up to our hometown, and he was going to bring one. He goes, what one do you want? And I said, your dad's had bird dogs and raised bird dogs for 50 years. Whatever one John picks out, that's the one I want.
Okay.
You know,
smart,
just
yeah.
Pick it out for me. And he brought me Gus, and that was it. You know, it just snowballed into what I'm doing now. So,
and did you, I mean, I'll just say this. Let me ask it this way. A lot of guys shoot their hunts on GoPros strapped to their caps.
Oh yeah.
I mean that there's shortage of content.
No shortage of content.
And you pop on, you know, you go on YouTube and there's dozens with 38 views.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
What do you think it is about yours that, like, I mean, I know there's always some like magic fairy dust whenever anything in that social media world rises above the noise.
Yeah.
Like, do you have any sense of what it was about your stuff?
Yeah, the sheer number of birds in some of my first few videos, or the up close, like it's weird. Like our core area that we hunt is kind of different than just the big grass fields. Like you're hunting draws and you're hunting, you know, crick lines, and
yeah,
our method is to push the. I mean, you kind of, and we. That's the other thing. We're like kind of loud. We're not quiet by any means. Mm-hmm. But we're like, it's like a drive. You're like driving the birds down to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets down to the end, or when we bottleneck them down into the area that we think we can get them in, and then that's when it starts happening, and the dogs are pointing,
yeah.
And birds are coming up. And I think it might be part of the reason is because I get them, a lot of my stuff is really close action. I mean, I've got roosters at my feet. Like the one that I had last weekend of Iowa season, I shot that double in one shot, which I've never done. Which was unbelievable.
Yep.
That was late season birds. That was last weekend of Iowa season.
And they're sitting that tight.
On public ground.
No kidding.
Yes.
You say something that hadn't occurred to me before, but I think that's right because I watch a lot of these videos like a lot of guys do, but when a guy gets out of his truck and walks into a huge field of grass, you're like, I'm going to scrub ahead till I see the gun come up, and then I'm going to start watching from there.
Yes.
But when it's like, when there's some visual variety, like a tree belt,
yes,
right, or a creek bed or something like that, then it's like, this is a little more interesting visually to watch.
Yes.
So I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's, and then like the big flushes of birds, like we, like that one brush pile video I had where, I mean, it sucks that the brush pile's there, but it actually enhanced what was there because the cattail slough is still there and the good quality habitat's there and the trees aren't there for the red tails and the eagles to sit in to pick them off.
Right.
But that brush pile is there like, that feel, I mean, it's still there. The brush pile's their place to, when they come up and get grit, they'll come up and get grit out of the road right away in the morning, and then they'll go just sit in that brush pile, and it's right off the road. And I did not know that there was that many birds in there, but there was 50-some birds that were in this, and they just kept pouring out of it. Mm-hmm. And I've had more comments on that one recently than anything.
Hmm.
But, I mean, it was just non-stop. They just kept pouring out of this brush pile, but And the whole reason that, and everybody's like, well, why didn't you have your gun? Why didn't you shoot him? Well, that was after the fact that I had already went hunting and I limited out. I was mm-hmm. just driving by.
Yeah.
And it's a buddy's place. And I was just driving by to get them birds away from the road because I didn't want to lose my permission because he's had problems with people shooting him off the road and shooting at his house.
Sure, sure.
So I usually just kind of make a point to go by that place and then kick him back to the cattails uh-huh. to get him out of the way.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to shoot close to houses anyway in Iowa, right. but
yeah.
it is what it is. But I don't want him to get, you know, the farmer to get madder and madder and then be like, no, I'm just going to take everything out and we're just going to plow it and there'll be no birds around. I don't right. want my house shot. I'm like, I get that. So yeah. I'm going to do my best to keep stuff away from it so I still have places to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the gist of my talk here on the path to the Eppelin stage is basically like those of us who don't own land, how can you, because I'm trying to bust this myth that like you have to pay $250 per gun per day to hunt private land in South Dakota. Yeah. I'm like, or not be an asshole, like just be a nice guy yes. and like give gifts to farmers yes. and come out and help them. Like I'm coming out in May with a couple chainsaws to work on tree belts, you know, and yep. cut branches off of Russian olive trees, you yes. know, and so we can walk them and just little stuff like that, that farmers, hey, I planted some trees. Can you weed? Can you come help me weed? You know, yep. so I don't have to just hire kids or whatever. Well,
and that's kind of what we do too. Like we, you know, a lot of the farmers that I hunt on in other states, what farmer doesn't like a good steak? So
yeah.
you go get a gift card to the local steakhouse that's really good. And then you give it to them after the hunt. You know, you go hunting yes. and then come back and say thank you. And then you give them, you need to give them something. A lot of guys just want booze, which yep. is fine. That's 100% fine.
Yeah.
I'll go buy you a 30 pack of Busch Light, no problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you have to be nice to the person that's letting you hunt the ground so you build that trust, like you said, of people that aren't just going to, you know, go and pillage and, you know, drive on the ground and, you know.
I know.
Make it a better thing than when you left
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Tell me where, in as much as you feel comfortable talking about this, like where does hunting fit in your, how you make meaning in your life? Does it, did you grow up in any kind of like religious or spiritual environment? Has your outdoors life supplanted that or enhanced that in any way or anything?
So growing up, we would go to church on occasion. My mom was extremely religious.
Okay. we're getting comments heckled. from the Ron Scher Productions yeah. Cheap seats.
Yeah, heckled. Yeah. We're getting heckled. So growing up, we would go on occasion. My mom was pretty spiritual, but we didn't like. And the bad thing, I don't want it to sound bad, but on Sundays, we would go hunting. I mean, if it was hunting season, we would be hunting. We wouldn't be, you know, taking the time out to go that. In my mind, I believe that I can still talk to God anywhere that I'm at. And mm-hmm. I do it on a regular basis.
Okay.
To get a little, you know, to center myself sometimes, to appreciate everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then mom got really sick in 2004. She got cancer. And then she started to want to go all the time. And she was getting in touch with, you know, spiritually wise, because she knew what was coming.
Yeah.
Closer to the end. And I mean, she was always spiritual and religious, but it was starting to come to the realization that her time was getting short. So we would go with her and just spend time with her and doing that. And then the one day she said something to me that resonated, that she's like, what are you doing here on Sunday? You guys usually hunt on Sunday. And I'm like, makes a lot of sense. So that's what we did. So, and she would always have lunch for us when we'd come back, mm-hmm. you know, and it was like an event. It was like a thing, you know? Mm. So, that's kind of how it's gone for me. And then also with Gus, I mean, you know, you go out to the grasslands in South Dakota, and if you can't get a religious experience going to that place,
yeah,
you know, there might be something wrong with you. So that's where it all stems for me.
yeah.
as far as religion goes. I mean, it's, you always appreciate everything that every time that you go out. I have a good friend, Dave. Geez, now I'm the Pinotti Project. Dave, geez, I can't think of his last name. Anyway, so he's a big turkey hunter, and he goes, Dave Owens, you instead of taking a sip, you take a drink. Every experience that you go, do not just take a sip. Don't just go out there and shoot that turkey and then just hurry up, pack it up, and get out. Sit down, appreciate a little bit. This, you know, it might be a Sunday morning or Saturday morning or whatever. Sit down, appreciate it. Relive it in your mind and just go over with it and thank the good Lord that, you know, you got another day to do that stuff. Because some people don't. I mean, it's, you know.
What a blessing for your mom to say that to you.
Oh, man.
When she was so sick, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really gotta.
You know, and when she was when she was at the end, she was, there was a lot of things that she was, you know, would talk about how we'd do it back in the day. And then the funny thing is my brothers and I would sit around, and my brother Brian, my oldest brother, who I'm pretty close with everybody, but him and I are, we talk on a daily basis. And him in high school, he was not the, you know, the golden child. He was the bad egg, and him and his buddies would just terrorize the town. And, you know, back in the '80s, it was different world then, but so we'd sit there and we'd start telling stories about what we did when we were kids. And mom thought she was pretty slick. Like, she thought she knew everything that was going on.
Okay.
And Brian and Randy and I were sitting around and we're telling these stories, and she starts laughing, and she's like, I didn't know as much as I thought I did. So we had a good time, but yeah. She thought she was slick, and she had a laugh that was intoxicating. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, she and Dad, you know, ever since I was a kid, turkey season was what Dad loved.
Okay.
He loved bird season too, but turkey season, I'd get my coveralls on and I'd go out with him, you know, 12 years old. And we would sit and turkey hunt and come back, and, you know, mom would cook it and do all that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's been, hunting's been ingrained in my blood since the, you know, almost from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, so, where are you going to tell me about your what's next? Turkey hunting? You got a turkey?
Turkey season's up next. I've got a good friend of mine, Alan Pick, that lives in the town that I live in, and he's got three kids, and we've taken out his two oldest. His oldest daughter, Morgan, she's gone 3 for 3 on turkeys.
Wow. The
last 3 years. Brody last year, him and I doubled up on two turkeys, his first turkey.
Dang.
And then his youngest son, Reed, who's 8, he's chomping at the bit. He's like, I'm going this year, Dad. I'm going. Awesome. So we've got those three kids and then a couple other kids that we were going to take out. So it'll be a busy spring, but it's – I mean, I've killed a lot of turkeys in my life. I don't necessarily need to shoot one, but I eat them and I like them.
Yeah,
so I'm going to go out and shoot mine too, but I want to get those kids are first priority.
That's awesome.
Yep. And then we go to Missouri. I go down to southwest Missouri and shoot turkeys down there too.
Okay.
Southeast Missouri, we go down there too.
Yeah.
Usually a trip out to the Black Hills if we can make it, but
yeah.
Spring's a crazy time for the seed business.
I bet. So yeah, yeah.
So I've got to work every other Saturday, and so it's like, well, if I can get away. But local stuff, we can. I mean, we've got a lot of turkeys in our area, so it's not too hard.
So this is, you're going to be here at Pheasant Fest. It's going to be, it's crickets, I've heard, on Sunday afternoon. So you'll be here.
Oh yeah,
helping them tear down the booth and everything.
Yep.
Close up shop.
Yep. I'm going to go around to some people that I met that we've gonna hook up this fall and get stuff finalized, and I think I'm gonna make a big swing out west this year if I can get the time off. I think I'm gonna go to Utah and then up through Montana and back to North Dakota.
Nice.
Make that big swing, and then if I can make it, I'll take a day or two at least and go to the grasslands where my dog, where I spread Gus's ashes.
I make
that every year.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Even if I don't even go hunting, I still take the dogs out and we go out to where it's at.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's what you pointer guys can do that. For me, it's more duck, you know, it's pheasants and ducks, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, so. Yeah. I mean, it's not a flushing dog area.
Right. Or, yeah, it would. No, I've
you
heard,
can.
I know I've heard guys and they're like, oh yeah, and then my dog had a heat stroke because, you know,
yeah,
labs just can't handle yeah. that kind of work. So.
And I don't want to go out there when it's September and there's a lot of snakes. I don't.
Oh,
I
have no yeah, desire that's another, to go out yeah, there. Yeah, that's. Do this. What do the snakes do? Do they go hibernate later in the season or what?
Yeah, so like especially like in the grasslands out in South Dakota, they'll prairie dog towns or any old you know structure, they kind of gravitate towards it, and then they'll den up for the winter. If you stay away from prairie dog towns is like a key.
Okay.
Early season prairie dog towns, any brush, and any fence lines, just stay away from.
Really.
Them. As much, but I don't hunt when it's, you know, in September. I don't know how them guys do it. I can't
yeah.
wrap myself. And, you know, prairie rattlers don't have like the strongest venom. So, like,
still.
If a dog gets tagged in the nose or whatever, there's a good chance as long as you get them to the vet, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But if they get tagged in the chest, it doesn't matter how.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter even with the vaccine sometimes. It doesn't always Dang. Matter.
Yeah, I have no interest in
even testing
that.
But if you go out there in like November,
yeah,
they're all, even like middle October when I go out there,
uh-huh.
if I stay away from prairie dog towns and like barns and stuff like that, they're not even there. You know, they're not out. They're concentrated to them areas.
Okay.
So your chances, I mean, I've gone out there the last 15 years and I've had one encounter, but the dog wasn't anywhere near it.
Okay.
So I didn't have to worry about it. I just turned around and went the other way. But, and I haven't had any encounters, knock on wood, but
yeah.
I make sure that I go late enough that I don't have to.
Yeah, yeah. Stay away from
concentrate
yeah.
on that.
Yeah, that seems like no fun.
So Utah, I think, is going to be a mountain grouse, so I don't have to worry about snakes up there.
Okay.
Either. Yeah.
That'll be hard work, man.
I know. I got to lose a little more weight. Hopefully, I won't be breathing near as hard on the videos.
Well, I'll look forward to watching them. I really appreciate you coming on and
definitely
getting to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to share the field sometime.
I'd love it. I mean, I'm always looking for people to hunt with, places to hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm crazy about it.
Oh,
so,
yeah, anytime. Definitely. Same thing.
Good.
Yep.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet.
Yep.